right. Zechariah chapter 6 is where we'll be looking at today. Am I right? I am right, right? Okay. So chapter 6 starts another vision that God has given to the prophet Zechariah. And he's going to see chariots this time. So let's just read through verse 8, and then we'll go back and talk about it like we have been doing. Best way to do that is read the whole vision and go back and look at it. So then I turned and raised my eyes and looked, and behold, four chariots were coming from between two mountains. And the mountains were of bronze. With the first chariot were red horses, the second chariot were black horses, the third chariot were white horses, and the fourth chariot dapple horses, strong steeds. Then I answered and said to the angel who talked with me, "What are these, my Lord?" And the angel answered and said to me, "These are the four spirits of heaven who go out from their station before the Lord of all the earth. Then one with the black horse is going to the north country. The white is going after them. The dapple will be going toward the south country. Then the strong steed went out eager to go, and they might walk to and fro throughout the earth. And he said, go walk to and fro throughout the earth. So they walked to and fro throughout the earth." Well, that's a mouthful right there. Verse 8. And he called to me and spoke to me, saying, "See, those who go toward the north country have given rest to my spirit in the north country." Let's look at what this vision is. And there, when I read this vision, and I've done the background study on it, some of this is just, it's just, you don't know. So we can talk a little bit about it and stuff, but this is one of those where it's hard to put some things together. But so let's break this down and look at it. So he raises his eyes. He sees four chariots. They're coming between the mountains. Most commentators would be the mountains of Israel. Is it interesting? If I can draw this picture, and I usually mess up when I do this, but when you see Israel, like that, okay, and you have Jerusalem, which would be down in here, okay. You have the Jezreel Valley, which really runs like this, sort of. That's where Armageddon's talked about. There is right here, and again, I'm not trying to be exact, so you can just right here. You have a mount. You have two mountains, very familiar mountains. The first mountain over here, more toward this is where the Mediterranean Sea is. Okay, this mountain over here would be Mount Carmel. Okay, on the same ridge, but a little bit further down, you have a mount called Megiddo. And actually, and in the Hebrew, it's called Har Megiddo or Armageddon. Okay, now from this valley, okay, and by the way, the Sea of Galilee is up here, and then you go on down. Dead Sea. Okay, from this valley, right? It's almost like there's a turn in the way the mountains are set up there and stuff. Armageddon is a mountain, okay, and there's another valley that runs like this. And by the way, the reason there's a fort setting up here in Armageddon, and it's what do we say? 21, the tell, which is the ruins. The tell has 21 layers of different cities that were on there. Okay? In Solomon's time, Solomon kept his horses and his chariots right here. The reason is, this pass right here between these two mountains, right here, and I don't even remember the name of this one, this ridge, is where the kings from the north and stuff would come in, and this path leads right into Jerusalem. So, when do we know in history past that someone took this path? Anybody know? A man by the name of Sennacherib, the Assyrian king, overthrew the northern Israel. Okay? Then he comes down, and when Hezekiah was king, and remember, he threatens Hezekiah. Pete, we talked about this Sunday in our Sunday school class. He threatens them. He has them read this long list of what he's going to do to them. Hezekiah, the Bible says, falls on his face before God. And he cries out to God. And God says, don't worry. The Assyrians will, I will protect you from the Assyrians. And Hezekiah says, well, can you give me a sign? Remember what the sign was? He made the shadow go backwards on the steps, 10 steps. It's not possible, but he did. So that night, you remember, that it says the angel of the Lord went. Actually, I think there it actually says the death angel went among the Assyrian armies, and that night 180,000 plus of them died that night. They said when the rest of them woke up, they saw all the people dead. Sennacherib turns around. I think I would too. And he heads back up. He heads back up to Syria, or Assyria. Okay. He's up there, and a few years later, his sons sneak up on him while he's praying to his false god, and they kill him with the sword. A lovely man, okay? But my point is, the way the terrain there is, it speaks of this. Now, in the future, why they talk about the Battle of Armageddon, okay? The Battle of Armageddon is really, as I understand, more of a series of battles. Okay, but in Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39, it talks about that the kings of the north will come down into the Holy Land. Okay, how will they come down into the Holy Land? Where will they bring their troops? How would they come through? Well, we know they could certainly fly in, and they will. Okay, we know that. But if you're going to bring ground troops and you're going to bring them into eventually their place where they're headed to is Jerusalem. They will come through the Jezreel Valley. They will come by Megiddo, or Armageddon, and they will take the same path into Jerusalem and try to take Jerusalem. Well, the problem is, again, you read 38 and 39 of Ezekiel, once again, God's going to stop them here. Spirit of God. You know, I don't believe it. Somebody will say, you think it's going to be nuclear or this? I don't think it's going to be any of those things. I think this, just like he did with Sennacherib, God, the Spirit of God is going to take care of them. We're in very serious and tenuous times right now with Iran. And remember, Iran is ancient Persia. It's the same people. And they are prophesied. Nothing's new here. Nothing surprising. They are prophesied to join with the kings of the north to eventually come in to... If you read 38, 39 Ezekiel, you'll find Persia listed there, by name listed there. And we're going to see later on in Zechariah, I don't want to jump too far ahead, that the prophecy is that eventually every nation of the earth will turn against Israel. Every nation of the earth will turn against Israel.
That was the bulk of Netanyahu's speech this morning, was to fear Iran. That they're going to overtake the world.
It is not a shallow or empty concern. It is reality. Okay? And I about started wanting to cry the other night when I'm reading where apparently it was a month and a half ago that Netanyahu was going to send his planes over to hit the Iranians where they were building their nuclear thing and just destroy it and get rid of it and stuff. And he was threatened by our own State Department that if he did, we would shoot them down. That is not a small thing. Okay, it just broke my heart to even think that we would threaten. I mean, who, Israel? And if you take this completely out of the biblical sense, which you can't because we understand the contents of it, but if you take it completely out of and you keep it just in the geopolitical sense, Israel is our one ally in this whole region. Israel is the only democratic country in this whole region. And now we have leadership that has very little consideration for Israel. And I'm not saying Israel always does everything right politically. I'm not saying that. But neither do we. Now I'm going to jump to the biblical sense. The time when our nation completely turns against Israel will be the ultimate death knell. Mm-hmm. We've got so many other things going on. Mm-hmm. But, folks, you know what? God's hand's still on this country, even with all these other things going on. But I fear that when that happens, that God will take his hand off of our country. Mary.
And we still do have some voices supporting Israel.
Of course.
Just that we're not hearing those in the media. I watched a speech from AIPAC, which is the American, Israel,
whatever. And that's what's wonderful. AIPAC is the most bipartisan group that you'll ever see. Many Democrats, many Republican, but for the support of Israel.
Pro-Israel. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and just defining again and again that America's, she is, as ambassador, this woman who was speaking, that America's position with Israel will always hold. And we know that it won't at some time. But right now, there are still people rallying. I watched some of the speech this morning, too, and of course, the congressmen who are there listening are the supporters.
Of course.
So, you know.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I just want you to hear. It doesn't matter what side of the political thing you are right now. As a Christian, you need to be able to look at the unfolding. And again, I have Christians that try to justify. Well, Israel's not believing Jesus, and Israel's not following the God, and they're right. But don't make that the issue. These things were spoken of long ago that they would happen, regardless of Israel's spiritual condition, because we are told that he would bring them back in unbelief.
Yeah.
But they are the key. You like it or not. You know, so I just don't like them being the key. I'm just not going to. It doesn't matter what you like. Why didn't God choose someone else? I mean, because he didn't choose someone else. That's the key to understand biblical prophecy. And he didn't choose them because they were wonderful people. He didn't even choose them because they would be a people who would be faithfully follow him, because they haven't been. He chose them because he chose them. You know, and I don't know how else to say that. And he has not lifted what he said he would do. These things have yet to happen. They will happen. My point is, we go back into here again, and I don't want to get too far on what's going on today, but I don't want you to miss that either.
Right.
Okay? When he talks about mountains, when he talks about prophetic events, it pulls it into Israel. What are these two bronze mountains? The reason he uses bronze, because bronze speaks of strength. Bronze speaks of the ability to protect. This passageway has been a historical place of protection for Jerusalem for the whole history of Israel. So that's why I believe these bronze mountains have to speak of these things. Now, you'll read some other guys, they may try to pull them down into Jerusalem and stuff like that. But I don't believe that. I believe these are mountains of protection that God's Spirit is speaking of here. But there's something beyond any human protection, and that's the supernatural protection of God, and also the supernatural work of God. Because now, and I bring that up because now as we move into verses 2 and 3. We find once again, for a second time in this book, and not for the last time in the Bible, we find four horses. And we find that these four horses are directly tied to the four horses that we find in the book of Revelation. Okay? Now here he ties these horses to chariots. They're not tied to chariots in the book of Revelation. Does that matter? I don't know that it really does. I think what it does in the verbiage that he's using here, he's talking about power. He's talking about, I want to put it this way, he's talking about using, I believe, earthly power to fulfill his eternal work. And just like when we talked about the four horses in the book of Revelation, well, the first one is tied to who? The Antichrist. I don't want you to change. There's a reason why there's no change between Zechariah here and the book of Revelation. So when you read these things, I think once again you can once again say that the red horse or the red chariot, the red horse on the chariot in this one is war. Same way it is in the book of Revelation. Okay? The black horse is death. Right? Okay? The white horse, which is only mentioned once here, and he doesn't really do any... Well, he goes after them. And we'll talk about that. The white horse would be always represented a conqueror. Okay? And again, the ultimate conqueror would be Antichrist. But remember, there's another white horse coming. Everybody got that, right?
Yeah.
All right. And then the dapple horse would be a gray horse, depending on the translation. Would be what?
Is that the pale horse of Revelation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that one's a death, and the black is...
black is death.
Let's go to Revelation. I don't want to mix up. I miss myself. I'm on drugs today, so if I...
So noted on the tape.
It's on the tape. Yeah, I got to... He's on drugs. Okay. First seal, white horse. Let's just go through these very quick. The white horse certainly is a conqueror. We know him to be the Antichrist. The second seal would be a red horse, and he is to take peace from the earth. So that represents war. The third horse was a black horse, and he had on a pair of scales in his hand. So the black horse is pestilence, famine. Okay? Keep those things together, famine, pestilence. Then the fourth horse is the pale horse or dapple horse. They both are the same thing, or sometimes gray. And the name that was set on, the one who said the name of him was death. So the pale horse is death. The black horse is pestilence, famine, diseases, all those kind of things. Okay? Same thing that's here. All right? Now, any questions or comments on that? Everybody clear on those things? And again, I want to say, I think the four here are the same four that you see in Revelation. Look at verse 4. Zechariah says, well, who are these, Lord? And the Lord answers, these are the four spirits of heaven who go out from their stations before the Lord of all the earth. They are the first four released in the book of Revelation. The first four spirits. By the way, if you tie these two together, then the main cog of what we call the pre-wrath rapture group falls all apart. And remember, the pre-wrath rapture group believes that the rapture can't happen until God releases his wrath. And they hold that God doesn't release his wrath till the seventh trumpet is blown. About midway through. Okay? So what they say is they don't attribute the seals being broken and the first six trumpets to the wrath of God. I'm thinking, what? Okay? Who's in control when the seals are broken? God's in control. Who are, again, the four spirits that are being released or allowed to go forth? Once again, it is the wrath of God. The tribulation begins with the wrath of God. The wrath of God does not begin at the seventh trumpet. It goes all the way through. Because nothing can happen until God lets it happen. And once again, the first thing that's revealed is Antichrist. But he can't even step forward until God says, you can step forward. Okay? So, These are God's spirits, if you will. Again, we talked about them earlier in the book of Zechariah. We talk about them here. We talk about them again in the book of Revelation. Now, where are these guys going at this time? And is he talking about end times, or is he talking about the times that are about to happen? Well, You could. We always like to throw the dual thing in there. Some of it has immediate impact. Some of it has future impact. And by the way, the events that are about to happen for Israel as they come back into land. Remember the book of Daniel. They're very similar to the end time events. So, let me show you what I mean by that. Daniel prophesies through Babylon, Mede, Persian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to bring you to this point right now, the Greek. That's where we're at. The Greek Empire was led by who?
Alexander.
Alexander dies, most people say around 33 years old, as a young man. Probably the greatest general the world has ever known. Reading history, that bar none, there's no doubt in my mind. What he accomplished as a young man is just incredible. There's no getting around it. Okay? When Alexander dies, his kingdom, the world at that time, as again, was divided into four groups. One of his generals took the north, one took the south, one took the east, and one took the west. Okay? Now it's prophesied that there's a whole lot going on, but it's prophesied that eventually the one who takes the north, out of him will come a great leader. And great does not mean a wonderful, it just means a powerful leader. As a matter of fact, he's very evil. We know him as Antiochus Epiphanes. That's how I spell that. So, Antiochus Epiphanes, okay? We know what he did. Antiochus Epiphanes came into the Holy Land. He went into the temple. He defiled the temple. He slaughtered a pig in the Holy of Holies. He set up the god Zeus in the Holy of Holies and defiled the temple. Eventually, God brought the Maccabees along. They cleansed the temple. Took 8 days, oil, the whole oil thing and stuff like that. And out of that comes a Feast of Lights, which we also know as Hanukkah, the cleansing of the temple. Okay? Now, Jesus, in Matthew chapter 24, speaking prophetically of what would happen, takes them back to what did happen. He says to the people, says, when you see that which Daniel prophesied, okay, when you see that which Daniel prophesied, that is the abomination of desolation, happen, then you are to flee from Jerusalem. Well, how can they see what Daniel prophesied happen when it happened 300 years previous to that point? And why would they be concerned about that except that the day was going to come once again when it would happen again? That is, a ungodly ruler would go into the temple, would declare himself to be God, would defile the temple in that way, set up a statue in the temple, and require people to worship it. Now, where do you have that happening again? In the book of Revelation, you have it happening again. Okay? So, my point is, when you look at this right here, my personal opinion is the primary fulfillment of this prophecy is not future for us. It was future for them, but it's not future for us. I believe the primary fulfillment of this prophecy in Zechariah chapter 6 is this right here, not Revelation. Do you get what I'm saying? Though it's very similar, and this whole thing is a forerunner of the Antichrist who is to come. I believe primarily Zechariah is speaking about this time right here. For us, it's already done. But when Zechariah said it, it wasn't done yet. Okay, because remember, Zechariah would be he prophesied during the reign of the Persians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
So he's looking ahead to this. So it would be prophetic, but for us, I think most of this is historic. Everybody got that? That's not to say that you can't pull out some dual meanings for the future, because it is a dual meaning. And what happened, I like the book of Ecclesiastes. We're doing that on Wednesday night because there's nothing new under the sun. What has happened will happen. Boy, when you talk about prophetically, it's true. What has happened will happen. The Bible makes sure that we understand that. Okay, so when you look at these, the black horse is going to the north country, and the white is going after them. So pestilence, famine, all these kind of things he prophesies are going to go to the north country. Now, what would include the north country here? Okay, here's Israel, right here. This would not be considered north. This would be considered west. Directly west from Jerusalem would be what?
The Mediterranean Sea.
Okay. South would be the Sinai, Egypt, stuff like that. East would be, today would be Jordan. Probably, it's hard to know whether, you know, you see the Saudi Arabian area right here and stuff like that. So north would be
Syria
would be right now. Lebanon would be directly north. Turkey today would be considered north. Ezekiel used the word Gomer to deal with Turkey and that area right there. And again, geopolitically, we see that all these nations once again are coming against Israel. Ultimate north would be Gog and Magog, which is far above this area right here, which would include Asia area, Russia and things like that. West today would include, and that day would include the Greeks, would include Rome, and today would include Europe. Okay, and by the way, I believe we're always tied with Europe. Okay, when it talks about the West and stuff. Okay, so what does he say? He says is going to happen is that the North is going to be consumed by this thing. Now here's the part that happens historically. You have the rise in the West after this prophecy of who? The Greeks. Which way is Alexander going to lead his armies, folks?
West, wouldn't it?
No, not west. There's nothing west. Eventually, if he goes west from here, what's he going to hit? He's going to hit the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so where does he have to lead them? Well, he can't lead them down. He'd be here. Okay. I know I'm messing with you. Okay. All right. When he says north, north from where?
Jerusalem.
Okay. So here's Jerusalem. North of Jerusalem is what we just said. But to the Greeks, Alexander did not go north when he started his thing. Where did he go? He went east, which would initially put him north of Jerusalem. Now you say, well, what are you trying to say? I don't know if you're getting what I'm saying yet. You're like, I don't know. Okay, once again, Jerusalem. The prophecy is that pestilence and famine and all those things would go north from Jerusalem. But the source of that their trouble is not Jerusalem. He's just telling you the direction from Jerusalem is going to happen. The source is from the west. And that source that God's going to use is Alexander. Everybody got that? That make sense to you?
question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the black horse with pestilence and famine and all that. Well, why is Alexander bringing that?
Well, it's interesting that he doesn't really send a red horse anywhere.
Right.
But here's what you here in sequential order. If you tie Revelation to this, pestilence and famine always follows the war. Okay.
Yeah, because he doesn't address the red horse.
Right. The other thing that's going to happen is the black horse. I mean, excuse me, the dapple horse goes to the south, and there's where the mystery is. I can't tie that with any other things going on. So you're just going to have to deal with that mystery because I don't know. Okay. But what we are privileged to know here is how did the North fall? How did they come to that place where they lost all their goods? You know, the black horse is described as a rider that carries a scale. And the ability to produce, the ability to provide food, and that stops. And it did stop for them when Alexander came through. And just, I mean, he just, remember how Daniel described him? He would be like a leper with four wings. And he would move across the ground quickly. different from the Medo-Persians that lumber, remember, if you studied the Medo-Persians, they moved their whole societies. They moved, just sort of moved along. Well, Alexander did it differently. He didn't just, he didn't say, okay, bring your wives and your kids with you. We'll put up a city and stuff like that, like the Medo-Persians did. He said, no, we move quickly. It really is one of the times, a very different change in the style of warfare, where the Greeks did like similar to what we do. The Greeks left their families behind, and they went and served. That way they weren't encumbered by worrying for their families and all that kind of stuff. But that wasn't the way the Medo-Persians did it. They moved their whole. I mean, if the man was in the army, which most of them were, then the family went with him. Well, there's a lot of logistical issues with that, and you can't move quickly all the time. But that wasn't the way Alexander, part of his brilliance at that time was brilliance, was that he started a whole new style of warfare that the slower ones, even though they were actually larger at the beginning, they couldn't keep up with them. So, go ahead, please.
Well, it was a much swifter form of warfare, too, to keep the loved ones in families in safety and have the warriors go out and fight the battle.
And let's just be honest about this. In some ways, it was more brutal than even the Medo-Persian. Here's what I mean. The Medo-Persians, their style was what I would call assimilation. That does not mean they did not kill a lot of people. I'm not saying that. But what they would do is they would kill maybe the prime. Did anybody see what was the movie? Troy. Okay, and how you would send out, and you see this with Goliath and David, this style of warfare. Send out your champion, and if your champion beats our champion, then we'll surrender to you. That's the way they did it in the time when Troy was. And you remember Achilles was a part of this whole thing, and the Persians come in there anyways. That changed. Assimilation was not the primary thing. You didn't assimilate. Alexander did not assimilate other people's armies the way the Medo-Persians did. Think about even the logistics of doing that, and even the security of trying to do that. So when they came in, it was more of a take no prisoner type approach. You killed them, you slaughtered them. By the way, the Romans learned that very well. And probably perfected it even better than the Greeks did. Okay? So the black horse is going to the north country. The white horse is going after him. That's a champion. Who is a white horse at this time? I think the white horse, he ties this, is Alexander. That's who I think the champion is. Or the conqueror. Okay? And the dapple horse is going toward the south country, which represents death, and I really can't tell you why. I may have to look a little bit deeper because I couldn't find anything on that. Okay? Then the strong seeds went out, eager to go. They might walk to and fro the earth. And he said, go and walk to and fro the earth. So they walked to and fro. And that, what that says is this is not a one-time event. This is a continual. And by the way, look, the point is, during that whole time after Daniel and after Nebuchadnezzar and after Medo-Persian and after after the rise of Alexander, continually that whole area there is in conflict. It's in upheaval. And one guy rises, and Daniel even prophesies this. You know, remember we read the one part where he talks about, well, the king of the north will go to the king of the south and king of the west and all these things. And that's what he's talking about here. You know, there's going to be alliances, and there'll be murders that take place, and there'll be assassinations, and there'll be new people coming. That's what he's talking about here. This whole place is just in an upheaval, much like it is today. And much like it has to be as we come into the time soon of, I think, Jesus' return, because what there is no, if you think about this, in this whole region, there's very little stability today. Everything north of Israel today is unstable. probably the most stable north of Israel today would be Turkey. Yet Turkey has a lot of internal problems that if it's not very careful, it could tip one way or the other and go the way of Syria. For the longest time, Syria was pretty stable. Now, you may not have liked who was leadership of Syria and stuff, but Syria was pretty stable. Lebanon is a mess. Lebanon is, I don't even know how they function. You talk about Beirut and all these, you just don't know how they function. Jordan is rather stable still. But Jordan is having internal problems right now too. The Jordanian king, which I admire a whole lot. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I admire, you know, admire him. He's a strong man. But when you have, there's a whole lot of different groups. We talk about ISIS. You talk about Hamas. You talk about the what's the other one?
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, all these are all factions over here, okay? And they are creating instability in the existing, and they've done it here. Down here in Libya and stuff, it's completely unstable, okay? When you read about Benghazi and all this kind of stuff like that, it's just examples of how unstable it is. Nobody's in control there. Egypt has gone into a place of complete instability. One day they're for us, the next day they're against us and stuff like that. One day the Muslim Brotherhood has control, other days they back off, you know, okay. Saudi Arabia, who knows anything about Saudi Arabia except that people don't want to say it because they're our quote allies, but they fund a lot of the terrorism that goes on. You remember that the mayor of New York pretty well told the king of Saudi Arabia what he could do with his money when he wanted to send money over to help after 9/11. You know, it's really crazy in the sense of they spend money to fund these they want to call them freedom fighters, we call them terrorists, and then they want to send money over and say, hey, listen, let us help you out. Come on. I'm glad Giuliani saw it for what it was, and so. But you watch Jordan, and you watch Saudi Arabia, okay? And what you're going to see is all those places are become unstable. They have to, okay? Again, why should we support Israel? Because there is no stability anywhere else. There is no stability anywhere else. All right. So that's when he talks about this continual walking to and fro. That's the continual upheaval, the instability of that region. And by the way, that makes it easy for Alexander to come right over here. And it talks about how he just walked through this. This was nothing. This whole area was nothing at the time because of the instability of it. Okay. And you know what's going to happen? We get to a time. I don't know if you can see this yet. I hope you can see it. The world we live in is very unstable. Economically, we're unstable. Politically, even our own country, which had some strength, even in diversity of thought. You know, when I'm thinking about diversity of thought between the more liberal minded and the more conservative minded, there was for many decades, even though there was this difference of opinion, there was still this understanding that we are who we are. Okay, when you have those who are supposed to lead us stand up and question people's, you know, just integrity, patriotism, love, all these kind of things. That is an indicator, folks, that there is that stability is not there any longer. You see, what I could say to, well, hopefully we can say, like, even in the church. So, now, some people may have a different view on, let's say, eschatology than I do. As a matter of fact, I have family members that have different views of me. But me and my family members are like that when it comes to God's Word. I may understand a little bit different than they do, and I may apply something a little bit different than they do, but there's no question that though we might see some things differently, we're still together. What's happening in this world, and even in our own precious country, is we're not together anymore. We are more divided than we have ever been. And there are many who think it's an intentional move. And some people want to say I think you're being misdirected if you think it's an intentional move of one man who sits in the presidency. I really think you're misdirected. Now, I'm not saying he's not being used. There's no one person that has such power yet. There's more behind it than one man. How do I know that? Because I don't want to get too political, but I want you to see what's happening. Because I know there's more behind it, because the other branches that could do something, for some reason, are afraid to. There's more there. There's more there. I mean, when you have a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court make a decision that is completely contrary to anything he's ever done before. I mean, it is so polar opposite of any decisions he's ever made before. After he has a meeting with the executive branch, there's more to it, folks. You know, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy person, but if you don't believe that there is a shadow government or shadow power, then I think we're just being naive. I mean, I want you to take, and I think being focused on one man is what they want you to do, because I think you lose him. I want you to remember this just for a moment. We have as our president a man who had no background. You don't even know his background today. Had no background, had no real previous experience, was a one-term junior senator who rose to power very quickly. How does such things happen? You know, there's no way someone can do it by themselves, is all I'm saying. And I don't care if we're talking about him or the next person that will be in the office. I think we lose our perspective when we just focus on him and what we don't like, what he does and stuff like that. And I'm not saying you should like or dislike. What I'm saying is we lose our focus when it's just, you know, I think the enemy always tries to make things distracting for us. So I'm just going to get mad at you. Okay? And you know what? If I get mad at Ruth and I have a problem with Ruth and I continue to have a problem with Ruth, guess what the enemy has done? All I can focus on is her. And I miss everything else, the real picture that's around me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It happens so often. I see it in small ways in marriages where things get kind of off-kill and then we start attacking one another and we don't want to deal with the issues. First of all, the issues in our own heart, or the real issues that are causing families to dissolve and marriages to dissolve. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not excusing anybody. I'm not saying that they're not responsible. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm just saying, folks, we've got to keep our eyes open. If we believe these things are a biblical proportion, they're certainly bigger than any one man. Even Antichrist, when he comes, what's the Bible say? It says he doesn't do anything of his own power. He's empowered by the dragon. You see? And so on. We're looking for this one man, and we're missing the bigger spiritual battle that's going on. Instability is Satan's favorite tool. It's the opposite of what I'm going to preach on Sunday morning. That is, Sunday morning we'll be closing out the Sermon on the Mount, and what's it say? Build your house on a what? Firm foundation. So when things come, it doesn't crumble. What's Satan's favorite tool? A poor foundation. Yeah. Well, dissension is evidence of that. There's no stability. And I think, you know, if we're just honest that, and by the way, it may be even the enemy's thing of why he doesn't want you teaching your children the things of God, things are right, you know, things, you know, we're moving, even society's moving away from this stuff, because if your children are just wandering around, I have parents tell me, it just breaks my heart when a parent tells, I just let my kid watch, listen, believe anything they want to believe and stuff, and somehow they're going to come to some sort of, place where they'll understand when they get to that place of maturity. Well, how are they going to do that if there's no foundation for them? That's why the enemy loves it, when there's no foundation. There comes a time when life hits us so hard that the only thing we can know is I'm standing on a firm foundation. Instability. Don't miss that in what he's saying here. Don't miss it in what's coming. That's why markets are manipulated the way they are. How many of you feel safe having your money in the stock market? How many of you have money in the stock market?
No.
I do. Part of my retirement's in the stock market, just the way that it is.
Take it out.
Well, you see? But you take it out and put it where? Well, put it in the bank. Oh, well, okay. Or you know, put it where? The other thing is, we try to figure these things out. So I have a retirement account and stuff. It's in a bank. Let's say I take it out of the stock market. I put it here. I put it there. What happens when the dollar crumbles? It doesn't matter if I have $1 million in my retirement account if the dollar's worthless. You see the ability of the power to manipulate us. We're not independent anymore. There's no independent wealth anymore. It just doesn't exist. Nothing has an intrinsic value anymore. And sometimes you feel like you're a guinea pig running around on that little wheel. You know? I don't want to give you a downer, but this is where we are. These are hard times, and most of us are to the age, except for maybe one sitting there, that you know what, we're past our prime. And my worry is, you know what, my worry or my concern, it's not me. I'm okay. I think personally, if everything just crumbled and I had to survive and stuff, or die or whatever, I'm okay. But I got grandbabies. And I worry about, I'm concerned about them. I am concerned about them. What kind of world are they going to have? What kind of world are they going to grow up in? You know? All right. Yeah.
Okay, I know we're running short of time, and I know we have one more verse that we're going to cover.
Yeah.
But I need you to go back when you're talking about the shadow government, and please just state it clearly so that I understand, because I'm just ignorant of some of these things. The justice that made the decision contrary to all of his other decisions. What are you talking about?
Justice Roberts. Yeah. Chief Justice Roberts, when it came to make a decision, and you can look it up if you'd like to, came to make a decision on the legality of a tax or a penalty tax tied to Obamacare. Now, he had said many times before that it's not a tax, it cannot be a tax, it has turned into a tax. So, by the way, I don't know. I haven't done my taxes this year. I'm afraid to. If you've done your taxes, I don't know. Are they asking you whether you have insurance and stuff this year? Mm-hmm. So you have to somehow. This year, I think you just state that you have insurance. In the coming years, you're going to have to prove that you have insurance, or you'll be penalized because you do not have insurance. That was the legal issue. Whether it would be most of the conservative justices said no. Roberts went with the minority at that time, passed it through. That's basically why Obamacare got through. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what it is, I found my worksheet that I have from my CPA, and he said that it's going to cost me another $200 to $250 more than what he would normally charge because of the paper.
The new paperwork, yeah.
Fill out for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
and the truth is, everybody I know, and maybe you guys are different, everybody I know through the Affordable Care Act, which is also called Obamacare, my premiums have gone up. My premiums have gone up over $100 a month for no other reason except for the new regulations. So it's not really affordable to, But it all has to happen.
That's right. Yeah.
Let's go to verse 8. They said, and he called to me and spoke to me, saying, see, those who go to the north country have given rest to my spirit in the north country. And some people could and would say that this is an indication that of the conquest, to keep this together, the conquest. You can say rest of the spirit. Some people would say you have the establishment later on of the Christianity. I don't even know where this goes. So I don't have a whole lot that I want to say on this, but Mary, go ahead.
I have another translation that
go ahead.
It clarifies it. Look, those who went north have vented the anger of my spirit in the land of the north. So the other way that New King James says is my spirit is at rest because my anger was vented. The conqueror
came through.
Yeah.
So I do think that it has to do with the conquering of that region. Okay.
And this translation says, see, those who are going to the land of the north have appeased my wrath in the land of the north.
So again, he uses Alexander to fulfill his wrath to the land of the north.
Yeah.
That's how he closed that out. All right, we're going to stop there. I'm exhausted. I don't know about you guys.